I was happy with how I ended because I ran across the finish line. I got to see those fireworks and I was smiling. I was happy.
Welcome to the Shakeout Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Van Buskirk. The IAAF World Championships wrapped up on Sunday in Doha, Qatar, and our Canadian team did our country incredibly proud. There were numerous standout and somewhat surprising performances, but perhaps none were as thrilling or unexpected as Lindsay Tessier in the women's marathon. Today, almost exactly 1 year after she came on the Shakeout to talk about her 2018 Berlin Marathon breakthrough, Lindsay takes us through her stunning result at her first ever World Championships. To skip ahead to this conversation, scroll to the 25:30 mark in this episode. But first, staff writer Maddie Kelly and I bring you our wrap-up of the World Champs excitement, along with results and stories from the roads, cross-country courses, and trails. This is The Rundown. I feel like I'm going through World Championships withdrawal.
I know. I got to the office today and I was like, open the feed.
But there's nothing on.
I didn't have to open any feed.
No. So today's Monday. Mm-hmm. World Champs wrapped up yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So the last episode that we brought you, listeners, was our halfway point update last Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And there was already so much to talk about then.
But there's even more now.
But there's even more. And I can't believe that that was, what, 6 days ago?
Yep.
So much got packed into those 6 days.
I know.
So we're going to try to get through this stuff efficiently because the excitement is still high, but there's also a lot to look forward to in the coming weeks.
Yeah.
Let's start with Damien. Let's start with our multi-eventers.
All right.
That was exciting.
It was really exciting.
So Damien Warner has several global medals to his name, but he has never won a world championship or Olympics. And he was kind of pegged this year coming into these world champs as the big favorite to win. But of course, so we know that anything can happen on any day of competition for any event. But when you have 10 events spread over 48 hours... even more can either go right or wrong. There are just so many factors.
Yeah.
Damien ended up winning the bronze, not quite the result he was looking for, but he fought really valiantly during that time, got another medal for us, bringing our total to
five
medals, four bronze and a silver, right?
That is correct.
That is correct.
That is correct.
So way to go, Damien.
Mm-hmm.
He looked really good. I know he was a bit disappointed with a couple of his individual events, but overall, anytime you win a medal for your country at a global championship, you got to be happy. Mm-hmm. And the really exciting parallel story to that was that our newbie on the scene, Mr. Pierce Lepage, came away in fifth. And in fact, after the first day of competition, this decathlon, Damien and Pierce went into day two in positions one and two overall.
Which was so exciting.
Oh my goodness. It was thrilling.
How old's Pierce?
He's 23 years old.
A 1995?
He's a 96.
Got you. There were so many like younger, because this was a younger team on the whole.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many people with breakthrough performances. Sage Watson was another one.
Okay. Can we talk about how much of a beast she is?
Oh, she's great.
I think that her... the overall performance from these world championships was something that was actually probably not appreciated by very many people.
Mm-hmm.
So Sage, of course, is the 400 hurdle specialist.
Mm-hmm.
She runs the heats, auto qualifies for semis, in which she breaks a 20, how old year record?
Same, I think 23. And she's 24?
Right.
She's 23 or 24. So it's, you know, her age.
Right.
Yeah.
The national record in the 400 hurdles qualifies for the final, comes eighth in the final. So that's already three 400 meter hurdle races in the span of, what, 4 or 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read this before that the energy output for a four hurdles is similar to an 800.
Yeah.
So that's like running three 800s. And then... she anchored our women's 4x4 relay team.
I know.
Back-to-back heats and finals. where they unfortunately ended up getting disqualified for a exchange zone violation.
I know.
Which is a bummer.
That was like significantly after the fact, which mm-hmm. also really sucks.
I know. That was very unfortunate because they actually ran really, really well. Mm-hmm. But Sage Watson, you're the MVP, I think.
Yeah.
That was pretty impressive.
You're that chick.
Yeah. Well done.
And then a total dark horse, Andrea Sakafian. She's had a rough year. Like, she was dealing with injury for a while. She raced a little bit, but not that much. And every time she raced, she kept running the same time over and over again, which was what, like
15:11.
Like, it was just outside of Olympic standard, right, which is 15:10.
Yeah.
And then in the heat, she just smashes her PB, runs Olympic standard. And then in the final, she smashes her PB a second time to run 14:59.
I know. That was one of the races I was most excited about. So, to put this in context, we have not had a Canadian woman in a 5,000 meter final at the Worlds or Olympics in 11 years. The last time we put a woman in a global final in that event was Megan Metcalf-Wright back in the Beijing Olympics in 2008.
Our former Canadian record holder.
Our former Canadian record holder, exactly.
Before Gabriella DeBoo-Stafford rewrote the entire board.
Yes. So this was a really significant performance for Andrea. And again, to your point, Maddie, not only to be able to run a almost 5-second personal best in the heats, but then to run it another 5-second personal best in the final in those conditions, mm-hmm. that is an exhausting request to do heats and finals in global 5Ks. Mm-hmm. The event was won in 14:24, I believe, which shows you the depth of this distance globally.
Yeah.
And for Andrea to come through, she came 13th in the final and dipped under the 15 minute barrier by 0.05 seconds, which has got to feel so
satisfying because if she had run 15 like flat, she would have been so annoyed.
Right. But she didn't. And it shows she really fought that entire race.
Yeah. And even if you're out of medal contention, there is still, you know, something to be had in a final like that.
100%. Well done, Andrea. Okay. You just mentioned the next woman that we're going to talk about, your former teammate, Gabriella DeBoo-Stafford. Take it away, Maddie.
Well, any other year in the history of time, Gabriella's finishing time from the 1500 meter final would have gotten her a world championship gold medal.
And championship record.
However, on Saturday, she placed sixth because I think, what was it, the top eight ran under the old championship record. It was 3:58.
Right.
She would have easily cleared the old championship record, but it was the fastest women's 1500 meter race, I think, probably in history. It was without a doubt the fastest women's 1500 meter world championship final.
Nine women broke 4 minutes.
Nine
of 12. And then places 10 and 11 ran 4 flat.
Yeah. No, it was absolutely insane to watch because I was seeing, so Gabriella makes a big move with like 200 to go. And she's moving well with Shelby Houlihan, who set the American record of 3:54.
I know. That was unbelievable.
Also, Gabriella Stafford's now faster than every American woman ever, except for Shelby, who ran the record in that race.
That is an amazing stat. And what did we say? She's 21st
on the all-time list.
In the world.
Yeah.
Mind-boggling. This is what happens when you have the winner of the race run 3:51.95, it drags a whole bunch of other women to super fast times. Okay, it was funny looking at that finish list. Mm-hmm. It was like championship record, national record, personal best, national record, season's best, personal best. Like, I'm pretty sure 10 of those 12 women set either a national record, an area record, or a personal best.
Oh, yeah. No, that race was insane. That race literally tore down every record board in the world. But Gabriella is moving so well in the last 100 meters. She's moving with Shelby Houlihan. And mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my gosh, she's going to medal. And then she starts falling back. And I'm kind of like, ah, crap. I'm like, you know, not her day. And then wait. And then I look down at the time and I'm like, oh, wait, it doesn't matter. Like, place has now become irrelevant because Safan Hassan is crossing the line at 3:51 and Gabriella's not that far away. I was like, holy crap-a-moly. She's about to run insanely fast.
There's this great picture right after the race finished, right at the finish line, of Gabriella and her new training partner, Laura Muir, who placed fifth just ahead of her. Mm-hmm. And they have their arms around each other and they're both looking up at the scoreboard, at the clock. And there's just sort of this look of like complete confusion and disbelief, mm-hmm. because they're like, wait, we came fifth and sixth, but wait, we ran 3:55 and 3:56. Like, none of it made sense.
You could see, I think, like, with like 20 meters to go, she must have realized what she was about to do, because there was this grin on her face. Yeah, and yeah. like who cares what place you come if you run 3:56?
No one could have asked anything more of her. That was spectacular. It was perfect.
She is the highest ranked Canadian on any all-time list, with the exception of Donovan Bailey, who's 11th in the men's 100 meter.
That's a really cool stat. Like a G.
Anyway, so crazy.
So crazy. So moving up in distance, we had Mo Ahmed run another Canadian record in the 10,000 meter. So Mo, sort of similar to Gabriella, we were like, oh, he could really vie for a medal in this event. Kind of got kicked out the back door with about 600 meters to go. Mm-hmm. But this is days after he wins a bronze medal in the 5,000 meter, setting a new personal best. And then he runs another Canadian record in the 10,000 meter. I think this championship has been defined by like people just sneaking under really amazing barriers. Mm-hmm. So Andriy Sakhafian, 0.05 of a second under the 15 minute barrier. Mm-hmm. In the 10,000 meter, Mo Ahmed ran 26:59.35. About 2/3 of a second under that very elusive 27 minute barrier. And this is a distinguished club of men who can run sub 27 for a 10,000 meter.
Mo has landed himself 60th on the all time list.
Unbelievable.
Not quite as high as our girl G Staff, but pretty friggin' impressive.
Right. Really, really impressive.
And also, if you look at the names ahead of him on that list, they've gone on to do some pretty special things, mm-hmm. on the roads.
Right.
And Mo, I'm not telling you what to do, but have you considered a marathon?
I have a feeling we're not the first people to plant this seed in his mind.
Yeah.
But we would like to see it grow.
Because he's young.
Oh my gosh, yes. He could have a whole other career on the roads.
Yeah. He's not, he's 28?
Something he's 28. Like that. He could have another decade.
Yeah.
Pretty easily. Should he want it.
Anyway, Mo, should you decide to run a marathon, we are into it.
We absolutely are. And speaking of, the men's marathon finished off on Saturday night as well. And we had two Canadians, John Mason and Berhanu Degefa. They placed 36th and 45th respectively. And John's post after his race, he was just completely praising the integrated support team, the IST of, mm-hmm. Athletics Canada, particularly, mm-hmm. Trent Stellingworth. It sounds like as this event went on, the championships, our team was just learning more and more and more about dealing with conditions.
It.
And they nailed it. It was a little bit cooler than the women's race, but still like 30 something degrees and ridiculously hot. But Mason said that he went into this championship ranked 75th out of 81 people. So on paper, there were only six men that should have beaten him, and he placed 36th.
He did a really good job.
2:19.12, breaking 2:20 on that day was pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. And he credits most of that success to the work of the IST and all the sports science. Hashtag science is cool.
Good job, guys.
Way to go, team. So again, we came away from this World Championships in 2017, just a little reminder, Maddie, Team Canada won a total of 0 medals.
Yeah, it was rough.
It was rough.
And we had like
Studs. Things just didn't go right.
We were missing two of our real sluggers.
We were missing two of them this time, too.
Mel B. Who was the other? Oh, we didn't have Derek.
And we didn't have Sean Barber, who is a little, we're not quite sure what's going on with him, but he hasn't officially announced retirement. So there are 3 former medalists
that we didn't have.
And we still won 5 medals.
Wow, wow, wee, wow.
So our roundup was, as we said, 4 bronze and a silver.
Mm-hmm.
How many national records were there? The 10, the 15, and the 4 hurdles.
Yeah, which is some fun range and a nice mix of men and women.
Yeah, that's true.
So we're really team. Developing on all sides.
Yeah, it gets people so excited for what's to come leading into 2020. This was like the big test with it being only 9 months away now from Tokyo in very similar conditions.
Yeah, Tokyo's going to be hot.
Yeah.
So when people are complaining about Qatar being hot, guess what? The heat ain't going away.
Nope. And we did great with it. So way to go, Canada. All right, so moving on to the roads proper, we have one pretty cool result to cover and then a whole bunch of things to look forward to.
Yeah.
Because it is not only the end of, now that it's officially the end of track season, it is also, of course, well
marathon
into
marathon season.
Marathons, that was lovely, Maddie.
Thank you.
So at the San Jose half marathon over the weekend,
Jody Drotty set the Canadian M50 half marathon record in a time of
1:11:28.
Wow, wow, wow.
That is really fast.
That's really fast.
For an M50, that's incredible.
It is. Good job, Jody. Jody is from Calgary.
Sure is.
And this is a super cool result.
In the process, he also broke the Athletics Alberta 10K and 10-mile age group records.
Wow.
That's very impressive.
That's very impressive. That is a good day at the office.
That is a great day at the office. Way to go, Jody.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole whack of stuff coming up this weekend.
This weekend is actually going to be the most insane weekend of my life.
Yeah, you're going to have a lot to cover.
Yeah.
This is a hefty marathon weekend. It's also Canadian Thanksgiving. It's also shout out to our good Canadian friend, Charles Philibert Thibodeau.
It's his wedding.
It's his wedding. Happy wedding.
Happy wedding.
Which you will be attending.
I will be attending it. I wish it didn't fall on one of the busiest running weekends of the year, but...
Guys, don't worry. Maddie wears a million hats, and she's going to be kicking off her wedding shoes to throw on her...
writer's cap.
Her writer's cap. Good job.
Yeah.
So this weekend in Canada, we have the Quebec City Marathon.
Yeah.
We also have the 40th anniversary of the Victoria Marathon.
Yes, we do.
Which will be a great celebration for them out on the West Coast.
And doubles as the BC Half Marathon Championships.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So lots of excitement coming to you from both Quebec and Victoria. And then, of course, Maddie, as you mentioned, it's Chicago.
Yeah, it's the Chicago Marathon, which... has a very, very nice men's elite lineup. Not to be hard on the women. It's just not quite as deep as the men's field, if we're being frank.
Yeah.
But the men's field is pretty nuts.
There's unbelievable.
And there's like a lot of storylines because, you know, there's Rupp, who's looking to break the American record.
Yep.
There's Mo, who wants to break his own European record.
And come back as defending champion from last year.
And come back as defending champion. But then he's got a couple other guys who will seriously stand in his way, like Gatane Mola, who has the fastest incoming personal best.
Of 2:03:34.
Of 2:03:34, which he ran in his marathon debut to win the Dubai Marathon earlier this year.
Nutso.
It's the sixth fastest marathon time in history. It's the fastest ever marathon debut. If the weather is good in Chicago and he's feeling nice.
These boys are going to roll.
They're going to roll. And also, I feel like coming off of Bekele's performance, which was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And if Kipchoge the day before runs 1:59 for the marathon.
Right.
Like, this is just insane mojo going into your race. Like, I feel like they must feel completely unlimited.
Absolutely. Good word. Because, as you mentioned, the day before, potentially... on the Saturday is going to be the Ineos 159 challenge. So again, this is going to be the second attempt where Eliud Kipchoge is going to try to become the first human to go under 2 hours in the marathon in Vienna. The window of time has now been narrowed. It's going to be somewhere between the 12th and the 14th. So it's going to be over Thanksgiving.
Yes.
This is going to happen over Thanksgiving.
We're just not sure what day. It's probably going to happen in the middle of the night, Eastern time.
Right.
So if you're interested in watching, you got to either be cool with staying up real late or getting up real early.
Yeah,
whichever
that turkey wine
tickles
combo
your fancy.
Might get in the way of that. So pace yourselves.
Or like a good afternoon nap.
Yeah. Post-turkey nap and then rally for the 159. I like it.
The broadcast is set to begin sometime between 5:30 a.m. and 9 a.m. Central Europe time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're operating on Eastern Standard Time, they're 6 hours ahead of us. So that's anywhere between, you know, 11 p.m. and 3 a.m. But it could be
history, and not just like Canadian history or North American history, or like
which are
all
also
of these,
thrilling,
which are also thrilling, but all these different, you know, levels of history. This right. is like history, mankind.
Totally.
Kipchoge has likened it to going to space, which yeah. I think feels a little bit like reaching, but that's my own personal opinion.
Until one of us has run under 2 hours, we really can't say.
So it's true. It's true.
We're working on it. But yeah, make sure that you tune in. So there's a free YouTube streaming for that, which we will be posting all kinds of explanations on our website, all kinds of tools for how you can watch all of these different things unfold if you are not participating in them. So again, INEOS 159, possibly on Saturday, Chicago Marathon on Sunday. Do keep an eye out. We have Canadian Natasha Labode. She's the only elite Canadian in the field. She's going in with a 235 personal best, looking to improve on that. There are 10 elite men with sub 210 PBs going into Chicago. There are 9 elite women with sub 230 PBs going into Chicago. There is going to be some exciting racing happening this weekend.
And keep your eyes on Mola, because I think if he has a good day, we're going to see something very special.
Absolutely.
On to the cross country course, or should I say the golf course, because the Queens women went down to Lehigh, Pennsylvania on the weekend, and they came away as the victors in a pretty popular East Coast NCAA cross country meet.
Yeah.
Do you ever run this race, Kate?
The Paul Short run.
Paul Short?
I didn't personally, but our team did go a couple years. It's a big meet.
It's a big meet. You know, Villanova's there, Duke's usually there, yeah. Georgetown, like, you know, some serious cross country schools. And Queens was the best of the best.
They took the team title over all these like heavy hitting NCAA programs, mm-hmm. in great thanks to their star runners.
The McDougal sisters.
The McDougals, Brenna and Brogan, led their team to victory.
Super exciting. And Guelph women also had a good day. They finished 8th.
Very respectable.
Very respectable, considering the company they're keeping.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's one of the benefits of sending Canadian programs down to these bigger U.S. meets, is that, so two things. First of all, we're seeing the level of competition in Canada increasing year by year, which mm-hmm. is awesome. So the need to go down is not quite as high as it used to be, but it's still beneficial to be thrown into the mix with some of these top teams in North America. And especially when you can come out victorious on top of all of them, it's a huge confidence boost, teaches them really good championship style race tactics. It's going to be exciting to watch this Queens women's team.
Very exciting, especially because, like, actually McGill looks like they have a really strong team this year. Guelph always pulls it together come mm-hmm. championship season.
Right.
And not to pump U of T's tires, but the team's going to be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exciting stuff. Mm-hmm. On the East Coast, the big meet of the weekend was the Acadia Cross Country Invitational. This is a real staple for all the East Coast schools. They do it every year. The St. FX women dominated. They took the team easily over Memorial by placing 1st, 3rd, 6th, 9th, and 12th. That is a pretty good run. Mm-hmm. And the St. FX men also won their race, beating Dalhousie.
Yeah, good day. Good day at the office for the X men and women.
I love that they're called X-Men and X-Women. That makes me really happy.
I know. And they seem to have a lot of fun. Like, I have friends who are on that team, and it's a fun vibe.
I feel like the Maritimes are fun in general. The Maritimes are kind of the epitome of work hard, play hard. That's my understanding of them.
I need to go to the Maritimes
more
often.
You really do. Finally, on to the trails. So this was kind of a sad weekend, sad slash celebratory. So there's this awesome event called the Run for the Toad, and it has really like established itself on, it's sort of like a cross between a trail and a cross country race, because mm-hmm. it calls itself a trail race, but it's like, it's really closer to an XC race, mm-hmm. but this was its 19th year, and it has grown exponentially every year. It sounds like they take care of their racers really, really well. Mm-hmm. It has one of the best swag bags of any race around. There's a real like sense of camaraderie when you compete in it. And so for the last 19 years, George and Peggy Sarson have been organizing this race, but they announced earlier this year that they are going into retirement, and they've devoted almost 2 decades of their lives to this, and they're moving on to other things.
They like raised a baby. but it's a race.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Now it's time for it to fly the nest. Mm-hmm. So this year, so this race features a 12.5K, a 25K, or a 50K distance. And this year, Rachel Hanna was the top woman in the 25K race. She ran 1:45:29.
In the 50K, Julie Hamilecki of Toronto was the overall winner in 3:47, followed by Woody Snauberger of Cumberland, Maryland, as the first male in 4:06.
That's a pretty sizable margin.
Yeah, that's
huge. Way to go, Julie. Taking the winner takes all in that 50K.
Yeah, Julie really put the boots to the field. So we don't know exactly when the Ineos 159 will begin just yet, but please pay attention to runningmagazine.ca because as soon as we know, we will let you know because you don't want to sleep through running world history.
Absolutely not. So for the week of October 7th, I'm Kate.
I'm Maddie.
And we will bring you all kinds of road excitement next week.
Enjoy your holiday weekend.
Happy Thanksgiving. Lindsay Tessier has been steadily establishing herself on the Canadian elite scene over the last 2 years. She didn't even pick up running in earnest until her 30s, and even then, she considered herself a recreational athlete whose main motivation was to be social and have fun. But she started taking the sport more seriously in 2016 when she began working with coach Steve Boyd. Under Boyd's guidance, Lindsay saw huge improvements. And she had a major breakthrough at last year's Berlin Marathon where, at 40 years old, she ran a staggering 2:30:47. But even with this impressive personal best, Lindsay went into this year's World Championships with a lot stacked against her. She had no national team experience, she had never been exposed to the unprecedented heat and humidity of these championships, and her 2:30 time only ranked her halfway through a field that included former Olympic and world champions. Not to mention that Lindsay is a full-time teacher and, at age 41, was one of the oldest competitors in the race. But defying odds seems to be a particular skill of Lindsay's, one that she perfected less than 2 weeks ago when she placed a stunning 9th in the world. I caught up with Lindsay last week upon her return from Doha. Okay, so you just got back a few days ago from Doha, your first ever world championships. Well, your first ever national team, is that accurate?
It is, yeah.
So this is the first time you've ever worn a Canadian kit.
Yes.
Anyone who's been following these world championships know that it was ridiculously hot. This is a very hot time of year in a very hot country, and the race was held very late at night to give you the best opportunity to have the coolest conditions possible. But despite that, it was still, I believe, around 40 degrees Celsius at the time of your race. So obviously those conditions would make a huge difference. What was different about your preparation leading into this marathon to accommodate those conditions?
There wasn't much that we did here at home other than sort of pray for a really hot summer, which we got in July, and then August it cooled off. But once we got to Doha and literally your glasses fog up and your cell phone gets foggy and you're just hit with the most dense, oppressive heat and humidity that I've ever experienced in my life, there's major panic happened. I'm not going to lie. I was terrified. Like, it's just, you were sweating. You were walking and sweating. And you're thinking, how, like, I'm having trouble walking, much less running, much less racing. So immediately you have to sort of get your thoughts under control. But then as for preparing to race in conditions like that, we had to rejig fueling. So the body can't actually handle, I didn't know this, I'm not fantastic with fueling, but can't handle the carbs in the heat. It can, if you take in too many, it can have, you know, the opposite or adverse effects and you'll get sick. So I spoke to my coach, we spoke to Trent, and then Trent and I revised sort of what I had envisioned as for my fueling going into it, which it involved, actually fewer carbs and like more hydration. And then, of course, when it came to actual pacing, I like to run very viscerally or intuitively. I trust Steve and his planning completely. And so we work hard in the build. And then when it comes to the actual race, well, I just think the fitness is there. It's in my legs. I'm not really going to put limits on myself for racing and just let the fitness run for me. But in this case, I didn't know what to do and I didn't know like how my body would respond. So I FaceTimed Steve and that was a grim conversation. You know, I just needed him to tell me what to do. I just needed him to tell me how to execute based on these conditions and how I actually was perceiving the conditions. So, because you see the number, it feels like 44, you see that number and, you know, you've done some of your hardest marathon pace workouts and they were grueling here at home in, you know, when it was 35. And so 10 more degrees, it's just mentally, it's very, very challenging to get over. So all that being said, Steve sort of calmed me down and gave me the paces. And I thought, that's what I'm going to try. And he knows that's kind of where my fitness is. And so I trusted that and clung to that.
Almost every aspect of this World Championship marathon was unusual. Beyond just contending with the stifling heat and humidity, the race started at midnight local time and consisted of a 6-loop course. Plus, unlike most marathons, the men's and women's races were run separately, meaning that there were fewer athletes for the women to run with or chase. So there were so many unfamiliar elements to this event. How did that affect your mental preparation going into Doha?
I think the mental preparation going in was really spun in my mind. Like I'm thinking about all of, you know, at midnight, how am I going to run at midnight? How am I going to run in these conditions? 6 times around the 7K loop. All of it sounded really onerous and a little bit daunting and kind of impossible. But then race day came and it's suddenly you remember how to run and you remember that you love running and you remember that you're actually excited about this and what a tremendous opportunity it is that you're not going to waste or blemish with worry. There were some real legitimate fears, yes, that were in my mind on race day, but I shelved those.
As the race unfolded, Lindsay found that the factors that were initially sources of concern actually became positives.
And then running at midnight actually then became something comforting because we wouldn't have to contend with the sunlight. And the 6-7K loops that we did also became comforting because it's very, very familiar. So you knew, you kind of mentally then knew how to break that up. And there were so many fueling stations along the way. So we had 2 of our own, one at 2.5K and then one at 4.5K. And then along the way, in between our personal fueling stations, they had water stations and sponges. So there's a lot of comfort in that. Like you could break it up into segments and chunk it so that it was manageable in your mind. Because you're fit. You've gone through a marathon build, so you're actually fit enough to do it. It's just then getting your mind on board to accept these unusual conditions, accept and embrace the unusual conditions.
It was, in great part, thanks to the meticulous planning and monitoring by Lindsay's support team that she was able to execute so well under those exceptional conditions. Members of the Athletics Canada Integrated Support Team, or IST, which was led by physiologist Trent Stellingworth, were positioned around the course offering encouragement and ensuring athlete safety.
We had a lot of sort of contingency plans and there was, you know, Trent was telling us if your eyes are vacant or if you're swerving, we are going to take you off the course. And I had spoken with Steve about that too. And he said, you leave it to them to decide if what they're perceiving and how, you know, because sometimes you don't, the scary part is you, sometimes you don't even realize how hot you are or if you are swerving or, and then suddenly you're down and you don't even know what's happened. Like the brain actually physically does things that you don't know is happening. So anyway, all that said, yes, I was very comforted knowing that I would see the team twice on the course, and they had their eyes. They were concerned for us and they cared for us like nothing I've ever experienced in my life as an adult. Like, they were there for us. So there was a lot of confidence in that regard. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So you mentioned that you and Steve and the IST, it sounds like sort of in a secondary role, had, you said, a number of contingency plans. You had obviously slowed your paces back from what you were thought you were capable of running on a cooler day. What were your goals going in on a perfect day? What did you sort of set out thinking would be a really great accomplishment?
My goals changed very, very quickly once landing in Doha. So a very realistic goal was to just finish the race standing up. And that's not, we sort of joked about, you know, you want to finish this race and not die. But there was, we joked, but there was that fear just because the conditions were so severe. But the goal was to finish the race. And then I wanted to do it in such a way that I would respect the way I had run it afterward, meaning I knew what my paces were to be. I wanted to not give in to sort of any sort of ego, or I wanted to stay conservative, which is hard to do because you're with these women and the race went out pretty slowly and we stayed together, I would say, for the first couple of kilometers. And I was running with Charlotte Perdue, which is probably the highlight of my entire race. I couldn't believe it. And then, so there's that group sort of took off and I had no aspiration, obviously, to go with them. But then you find yourself in a group of another group of women who are running a nice steady pace and things are feeling comfortable. And then they start to take off and you're feeling good in the first lap or two or even three. And you think, hey, I want to go with them. I know the training I've put in. I know where my fitness is. I want to go. But you sort of run scared because sometimes you're hot before you even know it. And I didn't want to blow up. I didn't want to blow up because it was so possible and I knew better. And I have this team of people behind me who are helping me, who are working tirelessly. And I know what I was supposed to do. And so I wanted to sort of honor that and honor the work we had put into all this and run with a huge measure of intelligence and stick to the plan.
Would you say that you successfully accomplished that goal?
I would say that I did, yes. sounds weird to say that, but yes, I was proud of the way that I ran that race in the sense that I didn't feed into ego and I finished it really happily. Like, I was happy running for the first three loops around. And then, you know, after halfway, your mind, and in any marathon, your mind starts to then go, okay, I have to do this again. So that you're contending with that. But I was happy with how I ended because I ran across the finish line. I got to see those fireworks and I was smiling. I was happy that I had done it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Smiling during races is something that Lindsay is actually known for. If you haven't seen Lindsay racing in person, just take a quick glance at her social media and it will confirm that she is one of the most demonstrably positive elites on the circuit. Lindsay's love for running is palpable, and the World Championships Marathon was no exception. Most photos from this race were captured with you with a really big smile on your face. I can understand that it must have been such a grueling effort, and I'm sure you were hurting really badly at times, but it really, at least from an outsider, looked like you were enjoying it to the fullest extent possible. That's a really special thing. Like, is there something that happens either in preparation or during the race where that's intentional, or is that just you expressing your love of the sport, or both?
It's a bit of both. First of all, I had two of my friends and then their family come from Canada to come and watch. And there's nothing more special than seeing them. And I got to see them 12 times. And they were sort of my memories of home or like my comfort zone. So to see them, I was genuinely so happy and grateful that they had come out and done that. And then I love running and I love the sport. And sometimes I am just in my head thinking, this is great. I love this. I actually think that, as lame as that sounds, I actually really do think that. And I also believe in sort of the power of like suggestion. So if I'm running and I'm going, you know, this is hard and I'm grimacing, and sometimes you can't not do that. But if I can save that till the very end, and if I can, you know, convince myself and persuade myself that, hey, like making light of it, then your brain and your body follow suit. Like you tend to believe it. And I did. Like, so it's kind of both. It's a bit intentional because I do want to make sure that I'm having fun out there. And a lot of it is completely sincere, because to see my friends and then to see Lynn Kanuka, Natasha's coach out there, she was coaching me as well, which I really appreciated, and Alan, and just familiar faces. And then when I would see, again, the IST, I'm happy to see them. I'm happy I'm still standing upright, and I'm thrilled that I'm still feeling good.
Lindsay was wise not to take for granted how good she felt. Many of her competitors were not so fortunate. Nearly half the field, 28 women in total, did not finish the race. There were serious medical concerns for all the runners, and many were simply unable to keep putting one foot in front of the other. Did you have a sense of sort of what the carnage was on the course? Did you have a sense of how many people were dropping?
I didn't know exactly how many were. I did see two or three women that really rattled me, because one I knew, I believe she was a 219 girl, and we had spoken the day before in the Starbucks, and she's, you know, a powerhouse. And to see her lying on the ground when people were rushing to help her, and she was out of it. It's terrifying to think if somebody of her strength can go down, then it can certainly be me as well. But then also, just, you know what these women have put into this race, and you know the preparation, and you know the work that went into it, and to see them down is really extremely heartbreaking. Nobody wants to experience that or have to DNF. We don't line up to DNF, so to have that happen, it's scary and sad and heartbreaking to see it. I didn't know exactly how many had dropped out. I didn't know my position at all. I knew I was very far back in the beginning, and that was completely fine by me. But then at one point, Trent had told me that I was 15th, and I was stunned because I didn't really have a sense of where I was in the pack. I just was sort of focusing on what I was doing and like doing these mental checks with myself that, are you being realistic still? How does this pace feel? Are you getting hot? Or, you know, do you need to put the water over your head? Like, just had a lot of conversations with myself, just making sure that I was just monitoring what I was doing along the way. But I wasn't completely sure of how many people had fallen out.
Was there ever a moment of distress where you considered dropping out?
No, there were moments of distress, I would say, for sure, in that last loop, or even the second to last loop. It started wearing on me. But I don't know if that was Doha Marathon wearing on me or just marathon wearing on me. Because at a certain point in every marathon, you wonder, how am I going to get through this? And then in the last loop, I started to feel my calf was getting a little tight. And then I thought, oh, come on, Lindsay, just one more loop. But dropping out was I know that it's impossible to avoid, but really in my mind, it was not an option. It was not an option.
As her competitors succumbed to the brutal conditions, Lindsay continued to press forward. Early on, 5K in, she was in 52nd position out of the 68 starters. At 20K, she had moved up to 34th. And by 30K, there were only 13 women ahead of her. Every athlete wants to perform to the best of their abilities at a major race. But Lindsay's position was significant for another very big reason. Placing in the top 10 at the World Championship Marathon is considered by the IAAF as equivalent to an Olympic standard. This means that the top 10 marathoners in Doha don't necessarily have to run the blazing standard of 2:29:30 to qualify for the Tokyo Games.
When you crossed that finish line, did you know that you had cracked the top 10?
I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure. I was met by Sasha Golish, my teammate, and she was, you know, more excited than I was. And then Carolyn came over, and they were the ones who actually confirmed that I had placed ninth, which I still haven't, like, I still haven't digested that at all, what that means or how that happened.
You mentioned seeing other athletes in great distress on the side of the road and being shocked and a little bit worried that someone of that strength could sort of crumble under these conditions. What did this experience teach you about your own strength, or what impact did that have? I don't know if you've had time to reflect on that, but has this altered the way you view yourself and your potential, or reinforced it at all?
I haven't actually thought about my own strength as a runner. I'm just me. And so, like, I'm kind of in my head when I do it, and I keep going back on this. Oh, I just love it so much. And I know that's not the answer for everything, but I don't feel any differently or sort of look at myself any differently after doing this. I'm proud to have run another marathon in a way that I respect and have executed in a way that was suggested to me that I do. And yeah, I still feel just like this sort of naive runner who just has no idea what she's doing other than how to put one foot in front of the other.
Lindsay crossed the finish line in Doha in a time of 2:42:03. It was a far cry from her 2:30 personal best, but a remarkable result given that the average differential between PBs and finish times was estimated to be between 12 and 15 minutes. For context, the winner has a lifetime best of 2:17 from the Dubai Marathon, I should add, but only ran 2:32 in Doha. By the time she finished, Lindsay was dehydrated and exhausted. She had spent almost every second of the race focused on staying cool, both literally and figuratively. Her attention shifted constantly from the technical elements of fueling and moderating core temperature to her emotional and mental check-ins. And yet she reflects fondly on several times during the grueling 42 kilometers when she was just truly in the moment.
Definitely seeing my friends from home was just extremely memorable and important. And then there was a lot of that race as well where I was by myself. And in those moments, I would channel being back home and running on my own as well. And those are just moments that I cherish just in general when I'm running. Being by myself, enjoying the actual feeling of running, feeling the warmth too. Like, when you weren't terrified of the warmth, it was kind of enveloped you, and there were moments when I felt really, really good running. There were many, many moments when I felt good running, and I wanted to savor those moments. Yeah, there was certainly moments that I will cherish.
Okay, so you are now back in Toronto. you made that long trip home. I know that you're probably still getting your head back on and, you know, getting prepared to get back in the classroom where you're a teacher. And so I don't want to pull you out of this enjoyment too much, but I have to ask the question, what comes next? Because of course, the top 10 at the World Championships is the equivalent of an Olympic qualifying standard. So that's something that you now have tucked in your pocket. You told me off the record that you weren't even thinking about the Olympics before this, but I can't help but think that that must be in your mind now. Can you run me through what is sort of percolating around what the next steps might be leading into 2020?
So definitely now the idea of Tokyo has been smashed in my face. And that's, you know, such a great problem to have. But going into it, I didn't want to think anything beyond what I was fortunate enough to have happening in that moment. Right now, I want to get back to, you know, school and my wonderful routine of running in the mornings. And then I will probably do some halves in the spring and maybe some 10Ks, depending on what Steve foresees for me. And then I'll just see how the chips fall with the other marathons that are coming up. We have incredibly strong Canadian women right now. And so I'm not taking anything for granted about anything. I'm just going to watch and sincerely cheer the rest of the women and see how things go. But I would like to run another marathon in August.
When I interviewed Lindsay for this podcast last year, our conversation centered around Canadian Masters women redefining age and gender norms in our sport. At age 41, Lindsay is a big part of keeping this conversation relevant. And she's in great company, with the over 35 crowd now making up the majority of our elite female marathoners. In fact, Krista Duchesne just ran her fastest time in 4 years, 2:32, to place 12th overall and top master at this year's Berlin Marathon. I closed out my conversation with Lindsay by asking her to reflect, 1 year later, on what it means to be part of this exceptional group of Canadian women.
There is a camaraderie. I think the camaraderie is derived not so much from the age point of view, but just that there are so many of us right now who are doing things in the marathon all at the same time, really exciting, strong. We're having exciting, strong races. We keep on raising the bar together of what we are capable of. Like for a really long time. I mean, it took a long time for the record to be broken. And now we're talking about, you know, multiple women running sub 2:30 marathons, which wasn't even part of the narrative not that long ago. So I think there's a tremendous amount of excitement surrounding that and mutual respect among the women in Canadian marathoning right now. I mean, I'm really excited to see what happens at Scotia just because I'm a fan of running. I'm a fan of Canadian women's running, and whatever outcome that has for me personally and, you know, in Tokyo or whatever, that's not even what I'm thinking about right now. I'm more interested to see where in the world we're going to take this. Like, it's just really cool.
We want to give a huge congratulations and a big thanks to Lindsay Tessier for sharing her experiences with us this week. You can catch Lindsay and her compatriot, Krista Duchesne, on the cover of the current marathon issue of Canadian Running Magazine on newsstands now. You can follow this podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Shakeout Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to our show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks so much for tuning in this week, and we'll chat with you soon.